Sairam listeners, welcome to Radio Sai Answering Booth, and this is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai. Radio Sai Answering Booth is a show where we invite questions from all of you on practical applications of Swami's message, and I provide an answer based on Swami's message. So this is a show where I partner with all of you, and I must thank everyone who has sent us questions so far, and all those who will be sending too. Alright then, just like we did last week, shall we start with another profound quote? In fact, we will be starting every week with one such quote. The line I would like to read out today is from a very beautiful book that I read many years ago, and I am sure I'll be reading it many more times in the future too. It's called The Book of Mirdad. Remember the name, dear listeners, for many more quotes will be coming your way from the same book in the episodes to follow too. Well, the line that I'm going to read out today is as follows. Ask not of things to shed their veils. Unveil yourselves and things will be unveiled. So that is a very profound quote, and in many ways I feel that it is a central idea of spiritual inquiry itself. Well, you know, whenever we are in a spot, you know, when in a difficult situation, we're always trying to get on top of the situation by understanding the situation, by trying to gather facts, or, you know, get to know what people who are involved, or even ask people who must have gone through the same experience earlier. But in the perspective of spirituality, the closer we move to our truth which is within, the clearer things outside will start appearing to us. Swami would often tell us, you know, you keep asking others, who are you, who are you? Ask yourself, who am I? You will then know everything. I think this is a very important concept that will be extremely useful for all of us. Because life will keep throwing up many complicated situations every day. And sometimes we may have the experience to handle them, but other times it will be totally new to us. But if we have moved closer to our reality within, that much perfect our assessment of that situation around will be. And that is the whole idea of all our spiritual practices, you know, be it bhajans, meditation, seva, being good and kind, even obeying our conscience. So even as we go through life, reasoning and dealing with life problems and situations, if we can unravel ourselves, we see things more clearly and will start solving problems intuitively. So I'll read out the quote once more for you to think over it. Ask not of things to shed their veils. Unveil yourselves and things will be unveiled. Okay then, with that, dear listeners, let's go to this week's program. I got two questions lined up with answers, of course. So before we listen to those questions and try to answer them, we offer our most loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet, and we pray that Swami gives us more clarity in his message and the ability to put into practice whatever he has taught us. The next question we're going to be dealing with is from Malaysia. It's from a youth from Malaysia. I'm not going to be revealing the name of the person who sent the question, but I think it's a question which many people might be having in their minds. So I'll have one of our volunteers read out the question for us. After that, let's see what answers we can come up with for that.
I recently got married, and the marriage was an arranged one. I know that's kind of rare in this time. When the marriage was fixed, I was happy, and I can safely say that I felt that this was all planned by Swami. He treats me well and keeps me happy. The fact that my new family is also from the Sai fraternity gave me a lot of solace. However, my husband has one bad habit. He drinks. He's a strong devotee of Swami. And I'm not doubting his devotion, but this is one habit he cannot kick. He doesn't drink at home, but does outside, after work and at work events. His professional designation as part of senior management requires him to socialize and meet clients all the time. And unfortunately, this is part of the job. He knows that he can say no and stand his ground, but the issue is, he doesn't want to. He actually enjoys drinking and doesn't see it as a habit that needs to be curbed. He doesn't see a problem living two separate lives and rather thinks it's okay, this work life hidden from the sai eye. His parents don't know of his drinking habits. And while I have always been very open about behavior and personal preferences, this is troubling me as I have to lie at all times to my in-laws about his whereabouts. How can I help him see that this habit is detrimental? How can I help him see that this impedes his progress on the spiritual path? Because he has chosen this path, he knows this is not a habit to keep, but still does it anyway.
Right, so that was a question from a youth from Malaysia, and as I said, this is a problem which I think many youth face in Western countries. They are definitely Swami's devotees. They, on one side, they have this life where they are in bhajans and the seva and all of that is going on. But on the other side, there is this social life, the partying which goes on. Nothing wrong in that, but the consumption of intoxicants such as alcohol and other substances probably is not acceptable. In this case, especially where this listener is asking about how do I convince my spouse, how do I convince my husband that what he's doing is not right and he's got to give this up, I would probably say that that depends on how he relates to Swami, in the sense like if he is very emotionally devoted to Swami, I think what you should tell him is how much Swami was against some of these habits. I remember when I was a student, one of the first conferences, international conferences, which were held at Prashanthi Nilayam in that year, I think in the early 2000s, 2002 maybe, where you know, Swami said, if you wish to call yourself a Sai devotee, then these are prerequisites. I remember Swami saying this very clearly. He said, you should not smoke, you should not drink, and you should not consume meat. Swami said, these are prerequisites for anybody to call themselves a Sai devotee. Or for that matter, I think it was during the 69th birthday celebrations, yeah, in the year 1994, during the birthday discourse, Swami said very, very clearly and in a very forceful manner, Swami said, if you wish to give me any birthday gift today, because, you know, Swami said, people come to me and say, happy birthday, and if you feel that this is my birthday and you owe me a birthday gift, give me this gift. Don't smoke, don't drink alcohol, and don't eat meat. This is the only birthday gift I want. When Swami says, give me this, I think it's a very, very moving thing, because Swami never asks for anything. And even in that discourse, Swami went on to say, because, you know, I'm all the while worried about your welfare and the welfare of the society, and all of these habits are very harmful for the individual and for the society. So today, if you wish to give me a gift, give me these three gifts. That was on one occasion. And another very moving thing which I heard from a devotee many years ago when I was talking to a devotee. This devotee has been with Swami for many, many years, from the early 60s. He was saying that there was one particular observation that he had made, that there would be some days when Swami would give an interview for about an hour or so to a group. And immediately after the interview was over, Swami would run up to his room, which was on the first floor, and start vomiting. Swami would start puking out, and he would have severe stomach pains. And one day he asked Swami, what is it? And then Swami revealed to him that one of the people in the interview room had the habit of smoking. And just before they had come for darshan, they were outside the ashram, they were smoking, and they came in. And Swami said that he was so very allergic even to that smell of cigarette smoke that the body started reacting to it. That's what Swami said, you know, that's how much I hate that smell. And there were times that this devotee observed, especially when there's somebody like that, Swami would not eat for 2 days or 1 day after that, because Swami would get an upset stomach and he would have something like cramps in his stomach, almost like that, you know. The reaction to that was so very extreme, and Swami would not eat food. And one day when Swami was explaining this, Swami said a very beautiful point. You know, when you see me suffer like this because of a smell of cigarette or that of alcohol, you should keep in mind that this is how much I hate this habit. Not just spiritually, but physically, this is how much I'm averse to that habit. And remember this, you know, one person in the interview room sitting with that cigarette smell smoke is choking Swami so much. And if you become a devotee, If you're not a devotee, it's a different thing. But when you become a devotee, I install myself in your heart. And when you indulge in habits such as this, imagine that that Swami inside is sitting and choking and, you know, is suffering this. This sight should be kept in your mind. And this devotee told that that was such a powerful message that Swami gave. I think it's a lesson for all of us devotees, because we can apply it to this, the present context about consuming alcohol or consuming other intoxicants or smoking or eating meat. But I think this is a message for everything. Any activity which we do, we have to remember that Swami is sitting in our heart, and we cannot indulge in anything which Swami despises and will be really, you know, choking about sitting in our heart. Right. So this is a way of explaining to a person probably who is very emotionally attached to Swami, you know, as that devotee said, because, you know, as a devotee, when he heard this from Swami and when he saw Swami reacting the way he did physically, it was such a powerful sight for him that he would definitely not indulge or, you know, will not tolerate anybody who is under his upbringing to involve in such things. Well, if the person is spiritual in his outlook, I think the person who sent us the question did say that, that otherwise he is a person who is into a spiritual life and who is trying to do his bit. So in that case, I think it's also important to explain why a habit such as consuming alcohol is detrimental to somebody's spiritual progress. And I think, of course, this again is not from my understanding. It's all what Swami has said. One thing that Swami says is, you know, he said the entire journey of spirituality, you know, be it the path of devotion or the path of jnana, the idea is to overcome illusion and remove this duality between the devotee and the Lord, right? Or the Jivatma and the Paramatma, how you would like to wish it. The whole idea is to transcend illusion. And Swami said this illusion is unseen to the eye, all the while it's an unseen illusion that we're battling. But when you talk about drinking, when you talk about intoxicants, when you talk about substances such as these, you're talking about an illusion which you know. When you take these substances, it removes you from your present state of mind. It removes you from the current reality. And that is what illusion is all about. And Swami says that, you know, on one hand, you're trying to battle the unseen illusion. On the other hand, you're going and embracing an illusion that you know that it is an illusion. And Swami said that, I mean, it is really absurd to do that. So if you're a spiritual person, the idea is to get rid of illusion, and there is no way some of these substances can find their way into your life. And the other point which I remember Swami made during the very same discourse I referred to, and during the 2002, I think, Seva conference, where Swami was speaking about the idea of spirituality. And Swami said, you know, the process involved is when you consciously transcend your ups and downs in life, pains and pleasures in life, and reach a state of ecstasy. It is not to achieve that state of ecstasy or a quasi-state of ecstasy through these artificial means. Because Swami said, you know, that's what happens when you take alcohol. You kind of go into a state of delirium. You go into a state where the pains around you, the worries around you don't touch you. Yes, that is a state of unmatto. Unmatto is actually the Sanskrit word for being intoxicated. Swami said the idea is not to reach that state of intoxication through these means, but you're supposed to reach the state of intoxication through self-effort. You're supposed to reach it through a conscious effort. And Swami, in fact, referred to Narada's words in the Bhakti Sutra, where it is said that devotion is supposed to lead you to that state of matto bhavati, tupto bhavati, amritaramo bhavati. Swami goes on, quotes that thing where he says that through devotion you reach a state where you are lost, you are intoxicated, you get that God madness. You're supposed to get there through effort and not through artificial means. That's something which Swami would often say. And the other thing, very obviously, you can learn from Swami's discourses. Swami would say that the idea about a human life, you know, Swami would speak about human values. When you speak about human values, Swami would say that the idea is to live like a human being and not like an animal. You transcend the state of being like a beast. You're living like a beast and you live like a human being. And the difference between a human state and an animal state, Swami would say, is discrimination, is buddhi, is your ability to say right from wrong, what I'm supposed to do at what time, what I'm not supposed to do at what situation. That discrimination is what distinguishes an animal from a man. And when we take intoxicants, we are willfully undermining this discrimination of buddhi power. And that's what happens, you know, when you're drunk, you don't know your surroundings, you lose inhibitions, things which you would like to say otherwise, which propriety stops you from saying, you end up saying such things. That's what happens. Your discrimination is undermined. And Swami says that you are actually slipping to the state of an animal in those few moments. And that's precisely what you're not supposed to do. That's precisely what spirituality is all about. You're trying to transcend that state of an animal nature. And by indulging in some of these substances which will lead you to undermining your discrimination, you are slipping to that state of the beast. And about this problem about social drinking, because, you know, many of these youngsters make this argument that we don't get really drunk, we don't really get intoxicated, it's just social drinking, just a sip here and there, it's not going to harm me so much, and I know my limits. And when we were going through the 1990 Samukho series, we came across a couplet which Swami says there. And the context which he was speaking about was also very important, I'll come to that. But this particular verse which Swami said, he said it in English. Swami said, when you first take wine, he said, man drinks wine drinks wine, and then wine drinks man. How beautiful it is. It precisely describes what we get into when we get into such habits. Swami says, man drinks wine, and then wine drinks man. Because we might claim that, you know, I have control over myself, I know my limits, and I'm within that, and I'm not getting drunk, I'm just a social drinker. After some time, you are not there to decide. Your discrimination is not active there to decide whether to stop or not. After that, as Swami said, it's wine that starts drinking the wine. You are not there to enforce your control over yourself. It's not possible. And coming to that context in which Swami said that, Swami said the youngsters these days indulge in all kind of habits. They work very hard in the office, and Swami was especially referring to men. Swami said they work very hard in the office. And in the evening, they will go to the club and they'll socialize with their friends and they will get into drinking. They say they've earned the right to do that. And after all, they work so hard. We all know the idea which youngsters have now, work hard and party harder, right? So we kind of get into this idea that I have the right to drink. The context in which Swami was mentioning this was, Swami said, spirituality is all about at every moment asking yourself, what is the duty you're supposed to perform? What is the responsibility for you at that moment, at that situation? And when we start diverting from responsibility, when we start thinking that I deserve this, I have the right to do this, this is my life, I can do what I want with it, and, you know, these kind of attitudes is what draws you towards habits such as these. So Swami said, it's very important to keep a responsibility-centric approach to life. Of course, that's a bigger topic. Probably we'll delve more into it when a pertaining question comes, probably. Going back to this question at hand, one of the other factors about the question which was asked was, as a wife, what is she supposed to do? And she said that she covers her husband's back because of the fact that his parents don't know that he's into drinking and all of that. In answer to that, you know, are you doing the right thing by standing by your husband and allowing him to do such things? As a spouse, what is your role? It just reminds me of one of the first incidents I heard as a student when I joined Swami's college. It was a very sweet and humorous incident, but nevertheless very, very profound, as every other incident relating to Swami is. I don't know who the devotee involved is. Apparently he was a businessman or a politician, you know, who was into this circle where the socializing involved drinking and partying and all of that. In one of the interactions that he had with Swami, Swami was talking about other issues, and Swami suddenly said, bahut pita hai, in Hindi, meaning that you drink a lot. It's not good. Pita hai means you drink. And he immediately understood that Swami is referring to his drinking habit. So immediately he folded his hands and he said, Swami, I'll try my best to stop it. So Swami was very happy. Swami blessed him. And just as he had promised to Swami, this devotee, to his credit, he goes back and he quits the habit of drinking. And after he had quit the habit of drinking, and he was very happy that he was able to follow Swami's command, and he comes back, Swami tells him that pita nahi hai, very good. You know, you've stopped drinking, it's very good. And then Swami went on to say, Pita nahi hai, magar pilata hai. Right? You know, that's the word in English. Hindi Swami said, Pita nahi hai, magar pilata hai. You don't drink, but you make others drink. Right? This was the word, this was the phrase that Swami said. And Swami said this because later that devotee revealed that though he would not drink, the circle in which he was moving, and he had to constantly invite people for parties, he had to throw parties for his business partners or whatever it was. So he had to offer drinks. You know, he might not drink in these parties, but he had to offer these drinks when he would call these parties. And that's precisely what Swami was referring to. Swami said, you don't drink, but you are making others drink. And Swami said, that's equally bad. This is the precisely answer I would like to give to the sister who's asked this question. Yes, I can understand the husband-wife understanding which is there and relationship and all of that, but I think it is not right for any of you to in any way justify the other's habit, especially when it's a habit like this which Swami is so much against. And I think it is absolutely right to do what is there in your capacity to try and stop your partner from indulging in this habit. Do what it takes. Sit down and have a conversation. And as I said, depending on what his inclination and how his path to Swami is, based on that, have your discussion. And apart from the habit of drinking, bring up this topic of how right is it for us to claim to be Swami's devotees and say that this is my Swami's life, this is my Seva life, this is my Sai Center life, but this is my life. How right is it to lead a life of, you know, Swami would say that you can't ride two horses at the same time, and Swami would also say that your heart is a single-seater sofa, either the world is there or Swami is there. So when we say that we are devotees of Swami, or when we even have this slightest inclination to lead a life which has Swami as the center, or as Swami as the guide, or Swami as the guru, and how wrong it is to say that I can still continue my life without adhering to some of these cardinal principles or cardinal teachings of Swami. I think you should have a conversation, especially if you're in a situation like this. Sister from Malaysia has written to us. Have a conversation, and it will not happen overnight, of course. You know, that's with such habits, and that's one more reason why we don't get into these habits. You can't go in and come out willfully, because the habit has, it's almost like a monster. It has a will of its own. Right, so that is why it is very important to refrain from this in the first place, and that's why to keep the right company is very important. It's no point in being in the company of people who will encourage you to indulge in such habits when your path is different. You know, you can be friends, you can be colleagues, but when your path is different, you have to ensure that people don't transgress into your disciplines, into your spiritual life. I could put it that way. So I think that is the answer I could think of. And one final word, of course, I think it goes with every answer, every dilemma. I would suggest, do pray to Swami. Constantly pray to Swami. Make your efforts and offer your efforts to Swami. Finally, the transformation comes from Swami. We have invited Swami into our lives purely for this transformation, which is the first step. So pray to Swami. Offer your efforts to Swami. I'm sure He will transform your husband. So thank you for writing that question to us, and I hope this answers her question and probably question in the minds of a few others too. Next question, dear listeners, is one I got recently. I'm actually breaking the line and giving priority to this one. Otherwise, we've been going in the first-come, first-served basis. This listener actually had mentioned that this question is quite time-bound, and so I seek your indulgence in breaking the line and bringing this question up in the order. The question will be read out by Brother Ganesh from Radio Sai, so let's listen to the question first.
Sai Ram, I'm Sai Siddharth. I'm a student of Jawaharlal Nehru University, Hyderabad. By Swami's grace, I'm working on a startup idea that will help to solve safety issue of all motorcycle riders. I'm in a dilemma now. All my friends are going for competitive exams such as CAT or GATE, or preparing by taking coaching. But I'm here working on Swami's idea, and at the same time anxious, what if I fail, because then I lose my precious college life and be nowhere. And I can't even leave this idea because my heart tells me that this is Swami's way of getting moksha for me. But if I'll fail in this, I'll fail in life too. And also my future in the product, being a common man, is uncertain given that it is a revolutionary idea. And I would succumb to all pressures and I'll be the loser in the future too. Please help me. Probably only God can take me through.
Oh, well, that was the question. Thank you, Ganesh, for reading the question for us. Brother Siddharth, not probably, certainly only God can and is taking us through. Thank you for writing in with your question. Your question itself does show that you are quite anxious, and I would like to start by making a few very general statements. Those, according to Swami, are immutable, which means constant, whatever be the situation and whoever be the person involved. Well, firstly, any initiative that is purely selfless can never fail. If we take up and pursue something only because it will be useful to others, brother, be absolutely sure it will succeed. The second thing I'd like to tell you is, again, something that Swami would say so very emphatically. Swami would tell it in his beautiful Telugu, Nammaka chedina varu unnari kani, nammi chedina varu leru leru leru. There are people who have failed for lack of faith, but people with strong faith will never, never fail. Brother Siddharth, if you are absolutely convinced that this is what Swami wants you to do and you are pursuing it because you are convinced, there is absolutely no way you will lose in life. As Krishna would say, Swami will take care of your spiritual and worldly welfare. These two thoughts I'm sharing in general, and these are, I'm given to believe, is universally applicable. So be it your situation today or sometime in the future, or be it anybody else who is facing a similar situation, I think these two are constants we have to keep in mind. So if we are pursuing something absolutely selflessly, not for money, not for name or fame, not for recognition, be sure it will succeed. Or if you are 100% convinced that it is Swami's command to you, then you don't need to have a dilemma at all. But I think our problem is, most of the time, we are not sure, right? And that is why we have a doubt in the first place. So surely I'm not going to make the choice for you, like I've always told in this program. But I'll tell you a few points which may prepare you to take the decision yourself. Firstly, give up this fear of, oh my God, what will happen to my future? You know, Swami would repeatedly tell us when we were students, this is such a small stomach that you have to feed. Hasn't God given you enough talent and abilities to fill that and also take care of all those people who depend on you? Why should that thought even bother you? I mean, this is something which Swami would tell us repeatedly, and it's really become a part of our thinking. So that's the same thing I wish to remind you. You know, you write to me in English, which means you know two languages, you have an education, and Swami would quote one of those beautiful Sanskrit shlokas that says, education is such a wealth that it cannot be stolen, by giving it does not diminish. So when your parents have given you such an education, where is the need for such anxiety about your future? Apart from that, you have devotion to Swami, and how much more reassured and secured you must feel. So you must believe that whatever you decide between the two choices that you've shared with us, you know, you may pursue your startup idea or you may go for your higher education, but both ways you will not fail. Only after you give up this fear and anxiety, you can, you know, even try to make the right choice. You know, we at Radio Sahaja once done a satsang on stress. I don't want to go into that entire detail. You can listen to it if you're interested. But we had spoken in that program about the science behind stress. You know, when you are in fear or anxiety, your brain starts releasing, you know, more and more of something what we call stress hormones. And what do these hormones actually do? They will prepare your body for what is called a fight or flight response. For example, say you're walking on a lonely road and you suddenly see a snake. So the brain will start shutting down some parts of the brain and will start giving more energy to some other parts of brain, which will be useful for you if you want to start running away or start defending yourself. And one of the processes of the brain that starts diminishing at such circumstances is reasoning. And that is why if you are under anxiety, you will not be in a fit mental state to make decisions. So first and foremost, give up being anxious. because it is not good for you and there is absolutely no need to be anxious about your future. The second point I would like to make is this. You have not mentioned it in your question, but I would like to take it up. What do your parents want you to do? It is very important to consider that also, Brother Siddharth, because whatever you choose to do, if you have your parents' approval and wholehearted blessings, be sure, brother, half your success is already assured. So do speak to them and ask them what would they want you to do. I don't need to say this, there's no one who cares for your welfare more than your parents, so it is very, very important to get their approval in whatever you do. Either follow them or convince them. So before deciding, let that also be an important factor that you consider. Finally, I want to say something in general again. I think most of the youngsters, I mean, I can say this about myself too, have this obsession for dreams and fulfilling dreams. Now, please don't get me wrong. It is very important to have noble dreams and ambitions. But this feeling that, oh, if I don't follow my dreams, my life will be so incomplete. I think in many aspects, be it in career or when it comes to choosing a partner, you know, youngsters feel that if they are not able to pursue their dreams, life will be incomplete. And in some extreme cases, people feel that life is not worth living too. Brother Siddharth, let me tell you, dreams do change. As we grow older, as we grow wiser, our dreams change. You know, a few days back, I was listening to a very interesting speech by an American comedian. You must be knowing him, Stephen Colbert. It was a commencement ceremony at a U.S. university. I think it was a university in which he had studied. So he had come back to give a commencement speech. You know, he put it very, very interestingly. He said, had we all stuck with our first dream, the world would be overrun with cowboys and princesses. So whatever your dream is right now, if you don't achieve it, you haven't failed and you are not a loser. And if you do achieve your dream, you are not a winner. End of quote. Those are very, very wise words. You know, you can have strong focus principles, but such singular dreams, I think, are not really something which you have to be so obsessed with. You know, this idea of one pursuing the dream and putting in whatever it takes, I think it's true only in the case of some very, very real genius. Like, you know, some people are created only for music or for sports and, you know, their mind will not be able to focus on anything else. This idea of going after a dream with a singular idea is only for such people, but it's not the case for all of us. You know, have principles that you want to do something in life that will be useful to others. You know, that is a dream you can work towards, but don't be too obsessed with, you know, one thing that you're doing right now. Tomorrow you may get a better idea, or even, let's say you work on this, then someone might already come out with the invention that you're working on. So our dreams do change, and what is important is, we be sincere in whatever we do, and whatever you do with life, the more you live it for others, more your actions benefit others than purely yourself and your dear ones, the more fulfillment you will find in life. So to sum it up, there are 3 points which will prepare you to make this decision. Give up all fear and anxiety. Swami has given you enough skill and talent to take care of yourself. As Swami would say, God who has created knows to take care of his creation too. So give up all fear and then make a decision. Whatever you choose, you will do well in it. Don't worry. Second, but very, very important, ask your parents what they would like you to do. Let this be a very important factor in your decision. And lastly, don't think if you don't pursue your dreams or don't achieve it, you will be a loser. A tip I always follow, go one step backward. You want to work on this idea of yours. Ask yourself why this idea is important. If the answer is because it will be useful to others, then that motive is your real goal. The startup idea is only a means. So tomorrow you may achieve the same motive through another means. So Brother Sai Siddharth, I do hope I've given you something to think about which will help you decide better. If there is any more clarifications or any more questions that you want to ask, you can always write back to me, and you know you can write to prem@radiosai.org. So thank you, Brother Sai Siddharth. I do wish you all the best for whatever decision that you take and for your future. With that, listeners, it's time for me to say farewell, but just for an hour, because I'll be back at 12:30 with Arvind for the afternoon satsang. I hope you found the program useful. If you have questions you'd like me to discuss, you can record your question and mail it to me. My mail ID is prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. I would really appreciate it if you could send me a recording But a mail with question typed is also welcome, and if you wish to be anonymous, you can tell me that too. But keep in mind, let your questions be about applying Swami's message in daily life in real life situations. So thank you for joining me on this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. I offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. I'll meet you again in about an hour's time.